Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
This is the Super Footy Podcast.
Welcome to the Round 22 Super Footy Podcast for the TAB. Who are you backing? Now I'm joined again by Mark Robinson, John Anderson and Brian Taylor. Now Essendon, Mark, John Worsfold, flavour of the week. What's the latest in your mind a couple of days after that horrendous performance?
The latest in my mind is if they have another poor performance this week, leading into round 23, where they play Collingwood at the MCG. Well, the fact is, I don't think John will be there next year. But they could still play finals, okay?
I know, which is incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. They've got the worst percentage of the first 13 teams on the ladder.
How many games do we expect them to win, do you reckon, Robbo?
At the start of the year.
Yeah.
No, but I didn't have them in the eight.
So they've done well to be where they are after 12 wins.
But just like game styles change during the year, okay. So what we were thinking at the start of the year is different to what we're thinking now about a lot of things in football. The games are changing. Now, John started off really, really badly. We know that. He came back and fought hard to get back onto close to level keel, and then had that really incredible run. Not incredible. Had a pretty solid run of come from behind victories. And then, yes, it changed. And then, but when you put up a 104-point loss like they did on the weekend, and I don't think anyone in football can just say, oh, well, that was just a bad week, let's move on.
No, I reckon they need to look at it, that is for sure, and forensically examine what happened. But when you look at their losses, 35, 23, 5, 4, 11, 59, 72 in the first game of the year against GW, they haven't been smashed at any other time. So I reckon if I'm an Essendon person, I would say, yeah, 100-point loss, shocking, bad news. We've got to look at what happened. Did we raise the right flag? And then after forensically examine that, I'd then look at the injury list and go, yeah, that's right. We had 20 players that weren't available.
But Essendon people don't think that way. The majority
well,
of
they should.
People, well, Robbo knows them better than me, and Scotty, but the ones I know are down, down, down. Part of that's been 15, 16 years without being in a final series.
No
part
doubt.
Of that's been what happened, you know, the drug saga. But John Worsfold, I don't get this, Robbo. I don't know him. I'm not defending the bloke because I know him well. I don't. I watch him sit there, the most impassive coach I've ever seen.
Yep.
Who appears to be doing nothing, sitting on the bench, just watching, not smiling, not getting upset, not talking to anyone, just sitting there. He's coached a premiership with Eagles, coached into a lot of finals. He's got to have something going for him, this bloke. Yet it seems to me like a lot don't want him at the Essendon Footy Club. He hasn't been embraced by the club as whole.
I would think that's right. And he's a really good person, a really decent man, John. That impassive John Worsfold. Brian, he probably tried to kill you at some stage of your career. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to think that a person who has got an assassin's mind can sit there like Marcel Marceau in footy. But I'll give him credit. He doesn't get over the top when they win handsomely, and he doesn't go crazy when they lose. He is quite steady. I think an issue he's got, and it's only my opinion, his mantra is you've got to give power to the players, right? And he did that at West Coast. But this group's not ready to receive that power. They don't know what to do. They haven't got the leaders like West Coast had in those days. You know, by the time you get to a grand final, I honestly believe that clubs often and teams often coach themselves. But Essendon are nowhere near that. And to give them that power early to say, no, work it out, come on. I don't know if Essendon is. Actually, they're far from that.
Well, Matthew Lloyd raised some pretty valid questions about the leadership group. I mean, you've got Dyson Heppel, Zach Merritt, who's probably one who tried the other night. Horatio Fantasia, who's out of form, possibly should be in the VFL. David Myers, who's a VFL player. And,
yep.
And there's one up, Joe Danaher, who's been injured for 2 years.
Too young, Scotty. Yeah. I think Robbo has just touched on a really good point there. Their leadership group's not ready. When you read out that list of players that you just did then, you say, right, they're just not ready to lead. They're too young to know what it really means.
So why isn't Hurley, and one of them didn't want to be in it. Hooker. And I'd say Devin Smith, actually. Devin Smith, to me, ticks most boxes you want as a professional footballer.
All Australian best and fairest. At round three this year, I wrote a story saying that there was some angst out at Essendon amongst the playing group. They voted Carl Hooker and Michael Hurley into the leadership group. They wanted to keep Joe Janahoo. He hadn't played for 12 months. Joe, and he's a bit of a kid, Joe. I don't dislike Joe, but he's, you know, he's sort of Joe. And Fantasia often gets injured. So there was a little bit of angst still in the year, but that had all been put to bed. The fact of the matter is, let's just deal with facts. Before the GWS game here at Melville Stadium on the Thursday night, there was a piece written that if John Worsfold doesn't play finals, he won't be at the club this year. Now, they went on a pretty good run. They came from behind, some wins and wins and wins. But what happens when you have a 105-point loss? You go straight back to that day before the GWS game and say, what is wrong at a football club when that performance is put in place? Now, people, what did you think? Effort? Coaching? You know, I would really like to get the GPS data and say, well, how far did you run? How fast did you run? You know, because seriously, you've got to look at the coach and the coaching department if you're going to allow 105 points on turnover, Ando. So you lose the ball, and that happens, and you've got to stop the opposition from grabbing that ball and kicking a goal with it, and they kicked 105 points, and the average is like 40. It was embarrassing.
You can think of coaches who've been sacked. You go back, Bards, almost as long as I do. I remember Wayne Schimmelbusch. Schimmer got it after 140 something points in Adelaide, Scott.
Dean Bailey, Geelong recently.
Dean Bailey, 180 points there.
180 points.
More than that, I think it's 189 or something. But their coach, you know, they end the coach, don't they? This game maybe goes down in the same way for John Worsfold. I just look from outside. I just find it surprising that he's under the pump. And he was under the pump before this that last weekend. Don't just use last weekend. There's been people gunning for Worsfold for a long time. I'm talking about rank and file supporters.
They don't know, Ando. They don't know what's going on inside. They don't know. All they can do is judge on what they present on a Saturday afternoon or on game day. They don't know. So we shouldn't give them the right to appoint coaches. I reckon supporters actually aren't happy unless a true Essendon person or legend of their club is actually in charge of their club. I think not just Essendon, that probably goes for all clubs. There's this myth around that you've got to bring back a great legend. You know, you've got to get Hurdy back, or you've got to get this guy back or that guy back. I mean, I just think it's mythical.
What do you mean?
Just on that. Well, I can tell you some stuff that's coming out of the club from people that I trust. You know, the playing group has got to bring, every individual's got to bring a sense of motivation themselves. It's up to the coach to bring that motivation together as a unit. You know, people talk about, are they educated enough? Are they motivated enough? They had some really good individual performances and they come from behind wins, and that's fantastic. And there was a lot of grit shown. But after 3 years in charge and you get to round 20 and you're sitting in seventh spot and you're playing for a final and you get beaten by the way you got beaten on the weekend, there's something fundamentally wrong between the coach and the playing group. That just does not happen. And I was trying to think, what if it happened to someone else? What happened if it happened to Damien Hardwick? Would we pass it off?
Well, it did happen to Damien Hardwick. Right, it happened to a game against Sydney.
131.
131. Was it last round, Scotty?
2-16.
Last round of 2016. They lost a game by 131 points to Sydney, at Sydney. Came out next year, won a premiership.
Won a flag,
Well, they had patience in Damien Hardwick because they thought they had the right person. But they were almost shot Richmond back then, seriously.
One bad loss. I don't think you can explode the world over one bad loss for me. They won 12 games last year. They've won 13 and the season's not over yet. Probably going to win one of the last two, split the last two.
Not 13.
Probably going to win 14 games.
The really
That's
story.
Pretty good effort.
The story behind John Worsfold before we move on. He was appointed coach after the most tumultuous period in the club's history, if not the AFL's history. Heard into bomber gone, right? We need a person who's a really good character person to bring this club together. Just bring some strong leadership himself and be a figure that wears a lot of the heat. And John has done that. Now, as 3 years have moved on, Essendon are wondering, okay, have we got the right coach? John was fantastic for that period of bringing solidity and comfort to a broken club, and now that's been fixed. Is he a modern day coach?
He's coached them to 11 wins and 9 losses, Barge, at this stage, but he can get to 13 and 9, which would be a very good year. And they got a chance of beating Freo on the weekend.
What do we make out of Blake Carosella coming back to the fold?
Good for Essendon. You want to improve your off-field coaching structure. Blake Carosella's CV is as good as most assistants in the game.
Is he a senior coach? Is he to replace Wilshere?
You know him better than we do.
No, he's... He's got a lot going for
him. Senior coach?
Well, that's what I mean. Is that what's this move? Or is this to support Worsfold or to support
what you know of him from your Geelong time, Scotty, do you think he's capable of being a senior
personality
coach?
Personality-wise would be the only thing. He's a very quiet sort of... But coaching, CV-wise...
Which is pretty quiet.
Yeah. internally, they're very, very happy with Ben Rutten.
I've heard player response to Ben Rutten has been largely very positive.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they went and try and get a Solomon. Get back the heroes, BT. Bring them home. Bring home the premiership heroes.
I'd love to. Ando and I are going to write a book on myths in footy.
Yes, we are.
And chapter one is going to be bring back the hero coach that used to wear the same colour and bleed red and black and all this crap. Mythical myths in football. Myths dismissed in football. It is just agonising to me that I hear this.
Give us another myth.
He loves his. No, well,
drop a couple a week. What's another?
No, we only get one.
One a week.
Or who can we think of, Barge? Someone who is regarded as a great mentor who, you know, might have been paid a lot. I don't know. You go with it. I don't want to get.
All right. Who's he talking about? Brian?
I mean, there's just things like. Wayne Carey's probably a bad example, but, you know, if he was in the coach, it'd be bring back Wayne because he was the king of North Melbourne and him. Or bring back Arch and the board. He's the shin boner of the century. And, you know, he wasn't the shin boner. You know, he's Glenn Archer and he doesn't really care about the club.
You're calling Archer a myth?
No, I'm just using a couple of...
He listens to this podcast, yeah, Glenn Archer.
It's not beyond him to jump in his car and drive down the lawn. I tell you, seriously.
Listen, I'm not talking about... I'm trying to give quick examples. If you want to give me examples, I'll come back next week with 1,000 of them and I'll have the
Brian,
book written.
Brian, as a friend, there are better ones than Glenn Archer, please.
All right, now, BT, we're celebrating Jared Ruffhead. It's all worked out the way we all want. He'll be there against the Gold Coast. What are your great memories of the Ruff? He's a favourite of many.
Yeah, he is. He's fantastic. Thoroughly deserved to where he's got to. Disappointing the way it's ended for my mind. I don't like the way it ends at Hawthorn and has for all of those multiple premiership players. I think that's a little bit disappointing. I think they should perhaps time it a little bit better to get them to their last game. To me, he's just been a great servant of the club, a great club man, never speaks outside the club, just gets the job done week in, week out, was an important and integral member in all those premierships. But it does bring me, interestingly, to not, this is not about Jared Ruffhead, because I think he thoroughly deserves to have a send-off game. But since when do players... have the right to have send-off games? You know, I'm seeing people chaired when they've played 100 games. I'm seeing people triple chaired off when they've played 150. When they're 200, there's like a black tie gala ball for them. I mean, this has got to stop. Players, stop thinking you have the right to have these. And us, the media, let's stop building it into a frenzy. We've talked Hawthorn into having this game. We've talked Hawthorn into having this game because we the media, have not stopped yapping about it.
You are still bitter about the fact that Lethal wouldn't give you a final run at Collingwood in 1990. You know that. He wouldn't even let you train with the group on the last night of training. They're just on that one about...
Is that true?
Yeah, he did actually. You're down at Victoria Park.
Away, Brian?
We just excluded Brian from the training group, from the final group of 24.
No. He actually made me run the warm-up laps first then excluded me in front of everyone. He wanted everyone to see that he'd excluded me.
Well, it's amazing you've come back from that, you and Lee. Now, just on what you said before about Hawthorn and the way it's ended for certain players, I'd argue against that. I'd say Jordan Lewis. Everyone loves Jordan Lewis. Jordan Lewis has played 3 years at Melbourne.
3 years at Melbourne.
So, okay, if Geordie had stayed at Hawthorn for two of those years, does James Sicily get the games in dream at halfback? Does Blake Hardwick get the games in dream at halfback?
It's all about the young guys. So you can't be old and finish off your career. And how do you know that Jordan Lewis wouldn't have been a great contributor at the Hawthorn Football Club over the last couple of years?
I think he would have been a good contributor, but I don't think a great. I think those days have gone past him. I think it was the right call on
Jordan
Lewis.
You don't need to be great. You can be good, and that's still good enough sometimes.
Yes, but Alistair Clarkson's talking about challenging again. And Hardwick and Sicily are two key
players.
It's
not all about young players. You can be old and still play. You know, ask Michael Jordan. You can be old. Ask Mark Scaife. He's still drove. Ask Craig Lowndes. You can be old and still mix it with the top people.
Clarkson wants to make young older quicker. You with me? Do you get that? He wants to get games into those blokes to make them put older heads on young bodies.
Oh, yeah, there's a thing called the VFL. Do it there.
I'd be really interested to know if Jordan Lewis and Luke Hodge and Sam Mitchell, what they really thought of Alistair Clarkson and how it worked out. We can all talk about it. We can all guess. I'd like to know what they really
think. They were pretty grumpy at the conversation that he's on the front foot.
Jordan Lewis, yes. Jordan was Luke Hodge was surprised and caught unawares. Sam Mitchell, I think, accepted pretty quickly.
Oh, the first meeting, I don't think.
I don't think any of them accepted it. No, and Luke Hodge, when he decided to go to Brisbane, my understanding is that Alistair Clarkson rang him up and said, no, please come back.
Yeah, that ship had sailed.
And he said, I'm with Fags. So
what a great move that was.
Oh, it's been a terrific move.
Anyway, just getting back to the broader point of milestone games, it's just got to stop. We've just got to, you know, if you play 250 or 300, you're entitled to whatever anyone wants to give you.
Do you want to keep Christmas Day going and Good Friday, Easter?
Easter Bunny. But what we'll do, Ando, is we'll have Christmas Day on Christmas Day, and we'll have Australia Day on Australia Day, all right? And we'll just celebrate the odd one of these. We used to just celebrate Farmer, Nichols, Barassi, all these great, you know, they're the ones that we used to, you know, get excited about when they were playing their 400th game, Kevin Bartlett or Dustin Fletcher or whoever it was. Now, all of a sudden, it's just, you know, everyone's a winner. It's like you, Ando, when you were at school, mate, you got a ribbon because you finished eighth. Everyone gets a ribbon now.
I don't think Hawthorn handled it really well. I think Hawthorn had an opportunity to come out weeks ago and say something. I spoke to Hawthorn yesterday and they said, we've been talking to Ruffy for 6 weeks. 6 weeks about playing a game. We're worried he was going to get injured. I thought Alistair Clarkson's comments last week were strong, but I'm not an AFL coach. I thought they were strong. A lot of people had to rearrange their life to get to Ruffy's game this week. I thought they were just really strong comments from the coach.
All right, moving on. We've got a blockbuster. I know it's a cliche, but this round there are some seriously good games. But GWS BT, I know they're going to play finals, but in the bigger scheme, do we think they've missed this premiership window? Have they completely stuffed it up?
Probably almost, I reckon. Look, they've battled injuries as well. I was speaking to Phil Davis only a couple of weeks ago, and I said, "How deep are you at the moment with all the players you got out? Where do you think your batting lineup ends?" And he said, "Oh, 25, 26." So when I look at that, and they haven't got any players back since then, they're probably going to get one or two back over the next couple of weeks, but I don't think they'll get enough games in them to be effective. I think you could probably say, Scotty, if it's not closed, it's fast closing now, particularly when you add on top of that the retention of players. Can they retain? Are they going to lose another one or two really good players next year? So I think it's fast drawing to a close.
The best list in footy in the past, I'll say four or five, I'll include 2015 when Hawthorn won their three-peat. GWS in 2016 was clearly, for talent, the 22 that played against the Bulldogs on that epic prelim final.
Yep.
That was so... There's not a bad player in that group. And I think Big Dawson might have snuck in. And with all due respect to Dawson, he would probably say he wasn't part of the best ones. But that was such a talented side that night. And to lose that... I remember the AFL... Very big name at the AFL said, "Phew, we dodged the bullet there. It would have been a year too early had they won the premiership in 2016. I reckon they'd like to have their time over and happily would have got them win the premiership in 2016.
Yeah, yeah. If they put it this way, if they win the flag from here, we'll be one of the great flags.
It ain't happening, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so it ain't happening. So we've got a line through GWS. Ando and Scotty, do you think the Pies are back in town?
No, I think the injuries have caught up to them. I don't think they'll get momentum back.
Ando? I think they're a rough chance, Scotty. I think don't underestimate the hunger, the anger from what happened in the grand final last year. That drives sides. We saw that with Richmond have got that this year after embarrassing themselves.
The last month, Ando, is the most important month in footy if you're a finals contender, I reckon.
Yep.
Now, they've beaten Gold Coast and Melbourne, but that's who they had to play. They've got Adelaide and Essendon to come. I mean, if you can put a month together, it can do wonders for you. But I always remember Mick Malthouse saying that when you bring injured players back towards the back end of the year, and I think Alistair Clarkson as well, with the exception of Rioli a few years ago, they need a month of footy to get back anywhere near the best and to be the impactful players that they've been. You know, if you're not getting them back now and you're relying on players coming back in round 23 or first week of the finals, then I don't think you can be a meaningful participant in finals.
Well, Luke Beveridge, if he was sitting here at this desk, would be saying, well, actually, we weren't too bad in 2016. Okay. We had the week off between the final break. We got five players back for the elimination final against the Eagles over there, and they went on to win the flag.
Well, yeah, but none of them had been out long-term, I don't think, Robbo. They were all 1, 2, 3 weekers.
Okay.
I'm talking about players that are coming back from over six weeks.
Darcy Moore.
It's too hard.
Stevenson, 10 weeks. DeGoey will be 3 or 4. Yeah. Darcy Moore will be 5.
Sorry, put me in the myth book.
What about, I mean, you mentioned the Bulldogs. I mean,
you'll get a good run in that.
That was a joke, Brian.
And so was mine.
Can the Bulldogs be a dangerous floater? I mean, are they getting it all together at the right
time? You know the answer to that.
Yes.
Absolutely. They are
dangerous. Well, why? No, why can they be a dangerous floater?
No. We're talking to win it or to play opposition teams.
I wouldn't be. I mean, Josh Shackey, I love the fact that he's starting to show a bit with Aaron Norton, but those two boys together as your key forwards are. Come September, a different ball game for them.
Their last three wins, Melbourne, Frio, Essendon.
If they're playing McGovern and Barass and whatever,
that wouldn't be ideal. Guys,
so
that
it's
would
a
be
different
setback.
Ball game.
Who they play this week?
GWS in Sydney.
It's a huge game of football, isn't it?
So if they win that, they've got Adelaide and Adelaide. They'll get in. They'll play Collingwood or GWS.
And definitely can win.
Have a listen to this. Look, Brisbane, you look at the ladder and you look at Brisbane, you say, okay, what do they want? Is it eight straight? I think they've won. And then I went back and I looked at the eight games and who they played to win those games. Have a listen to this. This is Melbourne. This is Brisbane. Eight straight wins. What are they, second on the ladder? St Kilda, Melbourne, GWS, Port, North, Hawthorn, Western Bulldogs, Gold Coast. None of them are any good.
It's a good point.
They have had the world's greatest draw.
So you're wiping Brisbane.
Guess what happens in the next 2 weeks, Robbo? They play Geelong and Richmond. They'll lose them both.
Can Brisbane win the flag, Brian?
No.
Yeah, I'm in a no.
No.
I think they've done an amazing
job.
Wouldn't mind if they did.
I hope so.
But I don't think so.
So, Brian, you're still Richmond, West Coast. Is that where you're?
Yep.
What about Geelong? Yep. Did they do enough to get you back interested?
I reckon you can boil it down to those three sides for me at the moment. And if anyone's going to jump out, perhaps Collingwood, but those three sides, the premiership's going to be won by one of them.
Oh, no, you spend a lot of time in airport bars and lounges. Brian, what are your spies telling you that the Carlton job and the St Kilda coaching job?
Teague's done, isn't he, at Carlton? Isn't he done? Isn't he going to get it? I mean,
I believe so.
Yeah, so that's one there. St Kilda, I think Ratten's done as well. I think the old myth of bringing back Robert Harvey. I don't know. There hasn't been a lot of talk about Robert Harvey. You know what is what has real punch is if the coaches that those assistants are currently with, if Matt Finnis or whoever's on the committee down there were to ring up Collingwood and ask about Robert Harvey's last 5 years, that's how they find out. I'm not even sure that they do that anymore.
They say they do
all this due diligence, but I'm not sure they always get the word they need to get. So.
They do. That means Brad Scott, probably announcing it here, I'm absolutely confident he'll be at the AFL next year.
So
he won't be coaching.
So he gets the 800 from North
And he'll get less money for
Matt Finnis's comments about Brett Ratton overnight were, I would have thought, very telling. He doesn't say it to say anything.
Just to remind the listeners.
He said Brett's done everything right. He said he's put himself in a good position. He was. If you were Brett Ratton, you'd be very encouraged.
Who would have thought when Brad Scott left North Melbourne at round whatever it was, around 11,
that he wouldn't 12, be coaching?
That he would not be coaching a team next
so,
year.
So, Robbo, will they do a deal that whatever the AFL pay him, that'll come off the 800?
There's a lot of mechanics involved here. He was on a big contract, 800 and 800 plus maybe. They're up for some money. Now, if he's not working, he's probably up for it all. But if he's working, there will be an arrangement.
What role in the AFL?
I actually think he'll join Steve Hocking's team. Now, what's becoming really apparent in the game and is the game trends and if we do this, what will coaches do? I honestly believe that it's a really, when he joins there, it's a great appointment because he's only out of the game as coach for 11 weeks. Go in, join the AFL, and talk to them in the football department sense.
800,000 was good kanga for a coach. He had a lot of experience, Brad, but his best result was
prelim, back-to-back prelims.
His best
position at the AFL, I would think, if you narrow it down to what he's actually going to be doing, would be sitting behind a door that says, "I am the boss." To ensure no more rule changes are made in the game that have no effect on the game.
You're really angry today, Brian, aren't you?
That's the door that he should sit behind. Surely we're not going to put him behind the door that says, please, can the person behind this door think of more rule changes to make our game better? Surely we're not going there to do that, are we?
That's a big sign. That's a big sign on the door.
I thought you wanted interchange reduced.
Well, Ando, that's the way it used to be, mate. So that is not actually a rule change. That's actually going back to common sense.
That's a rule change.
So I want a moratorium, a 5-year moratorium on all rule changes except the interchange.
There's no rule changes next year. The AFL have already announced it. Okay? So
no,
everyone,
but
hold on to your
hat. They're always conniving to try and get something up, Robert. They're always speaking to people about, let's see if we can stop this little thing on the ground with that little thing. The coaches are too smart.
Now, Brian, this podcast will be going up this afternoon. When you get off, just ring Robert Harvey and just say you weren't talking about him, about favourite sons going back.
No, I wasn't.
They're footy clubs. Who were you referring to then?
Look, I did. I wasn't even thinking of St Kilda when asked that question, so don't join those two together ever.
I'll throw up one coaching name from the same place as Robert Harvey, Gary Hocking.
Yeah, now there you go. Why does no one ever speak about Gary Hocking? He's next off the rank.
Yeah, Gary Hocking should be right up there.
Scott Burns is also
Scott Burns definitely.
In the same
Scott
paddy.
Burns is almost a Robert. It's
he
very
gets mentioned
it's,
a bit more.
It's crucial for Robert Harvey. If he he's going for this job. So if he misses the job, and we're thinking Ratton might get it, how many misses can you have before you're done and dusted? Brian Royal would be able to advise him on that. He went through it. Johnny Barker's probably there now.
Yep.
John Barker's so close to getting, well, certainly.
Second to Brisbane.
Yeah.
And second to Bolton.
Yep. So you just got to be so careful when you go for it. And maybe Gary Hocking's just waiting, biding his time, sitting one off, one back, Scotty, and he'll pounce. He'll coach an AFL club, Gary Hocking, guaranteed.
Hope he does. Now, we'll leave you with one thing, Brian. Friday night, you're going to be at your best, 15th to 17th.
Who's playing?
Melbourne v Sydney, which throws up the floating schedule. Are you a...
What a ripper. I can't wait for that game. It's going to be a ripper. Tune in.
Have you got a roaming Brian?
For the floating schedule, yes. I heard guys on Talking Footy mention 5 weeks. I'm not sure what you mentioned last night, Robbo. I reckon floating fixture, 1 week has been really good, but I reckon it should be 2 or 3. I think 5 is way too many because there's still many permutations at 5 weeks, but I reckon 2 or 3 weeks from the end would be a good floating fixture all the last 3 rounds.
Do you like the bye still before the finals?
No, I don't, but I'm accepted it and moved on. That's the sort of guy I am.
All right, BT.
Magnanimous Brian Taylor.
Thank you again.
What's the book going to be called? Book of Myths.
Ando, we are going to do that book. We've been talking about the Book of Myths. Well, and we're going to have people like yourself in it, Robbo.
Can you wait until I retire from here?
Myths.
We're going to drop one a weekend.
I've got a bit of a posse after me at the moment anyway, so I'm going to be a lot bigger posse by the time we do that book. There's the last one left in us, isn't it? You can't do it, but You're still in working in the industry. Cool,
me?
Just,
I don't think that worries Brian, does it?
I tell you what, I am going to do a book and it's going to be called Goodbye. And it is going to be honest and truthful, Ando. And if you want to type it up, you can. But it's going to be honest and truthful, something that, guess what, no one else has ever written.
Let's talk about myths for one second.
Yeah, we did that in 1990 and you almost got you kicked out of Collingwood for life.
Yeah.
Well, and you blame me for that.
Let's talk about myths for one second, Brian. You will remember that a long, long time ago I worked at Triple M with you.
Yes.
And one of my early two-hour sittings in a pregame, you said something to me at the ad break. He said, "You say that, I'll say that. That'll be great radio, you know. I'll agree with you."
I said, "I know where this is going."
I said, "Okay, no problem." So I said that something, what I was going to say, and you come out with, "Oh, you've got to be kidding. That is the worst thing."
It's a Triple M way, Robert. You should have known it.
I fell for it, and I called you a fake or a hoax on air. So you include yourself in your own book.
That is fantastic. That's the way we do business.
Roughhead wanted it. Shawley's run off the mark and eventually gets it. The umpire said not 15. Roughhead on his favourite boot. He was off balance. It was the Michael Jordan fadeaway by Big Ruff. Nothing he can't do. Oh, Big Ruffy.
Now on the Super Footy podcast, we've got the man who recruited Jared Roughhead, Gary Bucanara. Howdy, Bucky.
Howdy, boys. How you going?
Very well. I mean, a week like this must bring back a lot of memories from many moons ago when you picked that tall, what was he, red-headed kid from down the bush?
Basketballer.
Yeah, he was right into his basketball and he had a lot of those traits and probably still carried them through his career a bit with the double-legged jump, you know, dunking the ball and whatever. But, what a player he's been, eh?
It's a huge draft, Bucky, for Hawthorn, and you set up some premierships, or probably four premierships in effect. Just take us back to 2004, the planning going into it, the subterfuge, just how it all panned out.
Yeah, look, it was really important because the club had made a decision to really change the list and appointed Clarko as basically an untried coach, apart from his, you know, experience with Werribee and Central Districts and obviously Port as an assistant. But, yeah, going through it, you know, one of the things that, you know, Clarko really wanted to try, and we ended up with picks 2, 5 and 7, and with, you know, Clarko really wanted to get the two best, if possible, key position players and a midfielder. And, yeah, there was a lot that went on. You know, we sort of kept our cards very close to our chest, as we always do at Hawthorn. You probably got a bit frustrated in the media. We gave nothing away. But we found out that probably Roughhead wouldn't be there at pick 4 and Buddy was a chance to be at our pick 5. So we decided to take Jared with pick 2. And as it turned out, we got both Jared and Buddy and then got Jordan Lewis with pick 7, so it was, you know, probably exactly what we wanted, and, you know, couldn't believe our luck that all the cards fell our way.
When you say you found out, Brett DeLito, Richmond was always, it seemed to target him as the number one pick that year. But you knew that Scotty Clayton was in love with Ryan Griffin, is that how it panned out?
Yeah, that's right, and then we, that would have been pick 3, and then we believed that Richmond would have taken Roughhead with pick 4. So had we gone Franklin with pick 2, we would have missed Roughhead. So that was sort of like the calculated risk. We'd heard Richmond had gone off Buddy to a degree, just worried about his whether he'd be able to cope with the limelight of AFL footy. And you know, we're interested in Richard Tambling, there's no doubt about that, as a midfielder. But obviously our preference was, you know, the two key position players. Had Tambling been there at pick 7, we may have looked at him. But Richmond took Tambling at pick 4 or after we'd taken Roughhead with pick 2.
When you say you were considering it, when you arrived on draft day, were you absolutely confident that the Tigers would have taken Roughhead, or was that decided at the desk, Bucky, when all you guys put your heads together and start muttering whatever you mutter about. Was it decided then, or was it decided the night before or the week before?
Probably a few days before or in that week lead up. You know, you obviously have a lot of meetings and you discuss intel and you discuss information, and we'd sort of found out that Ruffy had already been invited to the president's place after the draft for a weekend barbecue. So
at the Tigers?
The Tigers, yeah. And
Clinton,
so
Clinton Casey, who was
we basically knew that he would go pick four if we didn't take him at two.
That was the draft. I went to that barbecue you're talking about. It was at Clinton Casey's place in Shakespeare Grove. The house was worth about $25 million. It was a nice little weekender. Looked over the city.
I've been there. It's a beautiful house.
They had five draft picks, I reckon, Bucky. You'd know them better than Tambling, obviously Dean Polo, Danny Meyer, Adam Patterson,
DeLedio.
That was the five. And they thought at the time this was going to set up the Tigers for the next 10 years, as you do.
Yeah, as you would.
Five under 20. And history shows it doesn't, but every club's had those, Bucky.
Yeah, absolutely. But one thing, Ando, is I've never heard a club walk away from the draft and say we stuffed it up.
Not even 10 years later. Bucky.
No.
So just on that draft day, so that was the Tigers group, and you guys took 2, 5, 7. We know that. Who did you take after Geordie?
Well, I think our pick was 21, and I'm pretty sure it was Tom Murphy.
And Max Little, was he in that?
Max Little was in that, and Simon Taylor.
And Simon Taylor. Yeah, he was a good pick.
Yeah, so he was in the 50s or something like that. So it was a pretty good draft. And look, Murph was a very solid player. I always say to Buddy, you know, just to keep his feet on the ground, that look, we had to get Tom Murphy because he pulled your pants down in the under-18s championship when he played on you, so we just couldn't afford him to go to another club. He thought that was quite amusing, you know, that I would say that to him.
You know, it's really interesting, Bucky, the way you described the two feet jumping, and everyone's got their imagery and vision of Ruffy as a player. He was incredibly courageous. He was versatile, great below his knees. He had a terrific one-grab set of hands. But you're right, sort of his special quality was the ability to stand, jump, and put his two hands above and pluck the ball, if that's the right word. Was that how unique is that for an under-19 key forward?
Oh, the fact that he he always played and took the ball at the highest point, you know, that sort of stood him ahead of everybody rather than having the bent arms going for a mark. He always had arms stretched out, and, you know, with his height and with his leap, that tended to get him over the top. And, you know, he had great hand-eye coordination. Obviously, basketball helps with that to a degree, but he had great hands. And, you know, his hands around the footy, it was very hard for the opposition to get away from him.
What type of personality, Bucky, for those who don't know Jared Ruffy back then and what he has become?
Oh, look, he's one of the best people, I think I've met in my journey in footy. The character of him, you know, he's just a ripper. And you could see, you know, that even other players at draft camps and at interview and in the AIS squad, they all gravitated to Ruffy because he was such a wonderful personality. You know, you could just tell there was an aura about him, and that was really infectious. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he lived with me and my family for 18 months after drafting him, he sort of became a part of our family as well. And you know, he was just such a, you know, laid back, just genuinely really good person. And you know, he had a great sense of humor, and you could just see that he was a real leader and someone that the boys gravitated to and would follow. And, you know, his career has panned out that way magnificently for him. And, look, he's got a big future in footy beyond his playing days, I'm sure.
How good was he for Buddy?
Oh, he was fantastic for Buddy. You know, look, Buddy was a very confident young man. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, but to his credit, you know, we actually had the three boys living with us, Buddy and Jordan, for about 3 months, and they had us out of house and home. But there was a lot of shenanigans going on, you know, but it was good stuff, you know, like they really bonded closely, those three boys, in that period of time. And, yeah, they became great mates, you know, together, and, you know, good friends with my son and daughter, etc. So, you know, we built some great bonds there, and, yeah, it was a really special time to be a part of.
Bucky, we'll leave you with an easy question. You played with Dermy and Jason Dunstall. How do they rate compared to the Buddy Ruffy double act?
Oh, gee whiz.
You want to make headlines, Bucky?
Yeah, I know. Lose a couple of friends. look, eras are different, but, yeah, look, Dermot and, you know, four premierships or five premierships for them certainly stands out for Dermot and Jason, but four premierships or whatever for Ruffy and a couple for Buddy, they certainly made it. So I'm sitting on the fence on that one, boys, but both fantastic for the Hawthorn Footy Club, both groups for the 80s and for the 2000s. They were certainly players that changed and made a huge contribution to the footy club.
Righto, congratulations, Bucky. If we go through the history of the draft and if we had to ask someone to nail three picks under 10 and nail them and get four premierships and two premierships and, you know, close to 300 games for a lot of them, I think that might be the best ever for that stunt for you.
You do walk away and you hope that you've got it right. And as it turns out, history tells us that we did on that day. So, it made a huge difference and gave Clarko certainly a nice start and spine to work around.
Buggy, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
So Vickery going wide. That's a good kick. He's got the distance, Ruffy. He's got the distance.
Yeah, they've just had a little bit more composure. Mills had time, turn it over, and then that precision kicking that we talk about, those uncontested marks, Hawthorn just able to get far too many of those tonight.
Can the skipper put them in front with anything? Good, long, straight kick. He does. He does. He puts them in front. How many goals has he kicked? 508. That's a special one.
Okay, now it's time to check out the odds at the tab, and we've got the great Nick Quinn on the line.
Gee whiz, what about some of the games this weekend? The AFL could not have written a better script. And there has been money for Brisbane when they host Geelong on Saturday afternoon. Now, on Monday, it was $1.90 each of two, but the Lions now dominate the betting at $1.77, Geelong at $2.05 outsider. On the back of that, a big game over in Adelaide with the Crows hosting Collingwood. Adelaide $1.68 with Collingwood at $2.20 outsider. Or the match of the round on Sunday, Richmond hosting West Coast at the G. The Tigers $1.55 with West Coast at $2.45 outsider. But I must admit, Scotty, I thought the Cats would probably start favourite against Brisbane, but the early money indicates that won't be the case.
Yeah, no, they're getting at a good price if you like the Cats. But, I mean, Brisbane, eight in a row, yeah, at home. It's a good betting game. Now, the premiership, it's been going all over the place. It changed again this week.
Yes, Scotty. And if you like a team to get the 4 points this week out of Richmond, West Coast, Geelong and Brisbane, maybe look at their price for the premiership as well, because that will change a lot after the weekend. It's Richmond and West Coast at $3.75. Geelong a $4.50 chance with Brisbane at $7. Collingwood best of the rest at $11. Greater Western Sydney at $17. But a win for those teams this week would be a big step towards that vital top two finish. And there will be ramifications on the premiership market.
And the Brownlow medal, I can't remember it being this open. Nathan Fyfe was the mover after another vote-getting performance.
Yeah, but maybe the bookies overreacted a little bit. They slashed his price from $6 into $3. They've pushed him back out to $3.15. He's the new favourite at that quote. Patrick Dangerfield, a $5 chance with Lachie Neal. Marcus Bontempelli continues to firm. 11 into 10 last week, 10 into 7. He's now the same quote as Patrick Cripps. And Tim Kelly, he was as short as $3.25. He's now the same price to run in the top three as he was to win it at one stage. He's a $9 chance to win. Money at odds for Adam Treloar at 17 and Travis Boak at 41.
Beautiful, Quinny. Thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Scotty.
That's it for the Super Footy podcast this week. Join us next week when we'll have more idea of who's going to be playing finals.